Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that song.
Oh, it's Happy Birthday.
Oh, very nice. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this edition of The Main Course. I'm Patrick Martins, your host. We're broadcasting live out of Roberta's on February 11th? 12th.
12th.
12th, 2012. And we have Scott Boggs, who is a... you know, an opinion leader, a gastronomic titan here in the U.S. He does many things, works on farms. We're going to talk about maple syrup. He's just an interesting guy. And thanks for remembering it was my birthday, Jack.
I just found out now that it was Friday, but happy birthday.
The best gift of all. I had just turned 40. So, yep, that is, it's actually a big week for me. In the same week, I'm turning 40 and getting married Ann Saxelby. And I've run, I judge things by fortnights a lot, and which is a 2-week period. And I have, my goal is to run 70 miles in the fortnight before the actual wedding, and I'm at 40. So, although I did not feel very good this morning, I was supposed to run 10 miles today, but. I reacted like a 40-year-old.
Nice.
To drinking. So, yeah, big day. And actually, we're sponsored by Hearst Ranch today. Right, Jack? Is that right?
Yes, we are.
And Brian Kenny is going to be the officiant at the wedding. So let's hear Brian's voice just so I can be prepared for what he sounds like.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby.
Sounds like a nice guy.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd.
Is he going to officiate the wedding by song?
No, but yes, actually, he might. You know, he goes around because he is the right-hand man of Steve Hearst, who runs the Hearst Ranch. And Steve Hearst is, you know, a son of the chairman of the board of the Hearst Corporation. So he can really do whatever he wants. I mean, it's like as close to royalty, maybe, as America has. And so he has Brian go around with his guitar. And no matter where he is, at a very fancy restaurant, in a hotel lobby, if he feels like a kind of cowboy song, Brian will play anywhere.
Self-proclaimed spreadsheet cowboy.
The spreadsheet cowboy. And it's really funny because sometimes the snooty manager will be like... you cannot play here, like in the middle of this living room or whatever. And then Steve will basically explain who he is. And the guy will be like, I'm sorry, sir, play away, you know, or he'll even chime in, sing with them. Anyway, so I had a very nice meal yesterday. For the first time, Scott and Jack, I paced the meal very confidently. Like nothing was cooking, nothing was really prepared. They were like, 10 people sitting down at the house, and I just offered crackers with an anchovy on it. Then Ann shows up with a huge loaf of bread and all this cheese, which got devoured. And I think that, you know, if you serve cheese at dessert, it doesn't get devoured like that. People have a little slice of it, but it's a real nice opening of the stomach, you know.
I like starting a meal with cheese too. Cheese and charcuterie is the way to go.
Plus, I think cheese is its own thing, and after dinner, it competes with dessert.
Yeah.
Whereas with appetizers, it would be a very interesting course. Anyway, and then everyone finished the cheese. They felt, you know, real sated, and then I came out with little sliders, just grilled the meat. Then everyone waited another half hour. Then we came out with petite tenders, this really cool cut of the cow, which we're selling over at Heritage Meat Shop. Anyway, it just paced very nicely. And then I started to drink whiskey and woke up very sick this morning. So, Jack, tell us the week in review.
I love that I have this theme music.
I think it should play for longer.
It really gets me in the zone, you know? So, announcement. New Heritage Radio show. Grace Bonney from Design Sponge is going to be doing a show with Heritage Radio. And she is very popular. She has a, like a design and home living blog.
She has thousands of followers. Betsy.
Oh my god, like 500,000, yeah.
The best man at my wedding is Toby Tumarkin. He's the guy I did the board game with, and his girlfriend, his, you know, who lives with him, was like, I heard that you're having Grace Bonney on the Heritage Radio Network. She is my number one mentor. I was like, oh my god, yeah, I had no idea she had such a following.
Yeah.
So what is her show going to be about?
She wants to have more serious conversations about design. I mean, her blog is the kind of thing where she'll post a picture of an old chair and then show how she redesigned the chair to look like a cute, you know, I don't know. You know, that stuff is not really for me, but she's going to be having more serious conversations on Heritage Radio.
About art.
About design, art, living, all that stuff, yeah. I mean,
so that's a new show. And then we have, two or three other new shows, right, coming in March?
Yeah, not quite ready to announce them because we're not sure which are going to stick, but there are a handful in the pipeline, so stay tuned.
Dude, congratulations on Ling, your New York Nick. He's like one of the greatest point guards in the league all
it's
of
like
a sudden.
The greatest sports story in the new millennium, man.
And plus, to think how sad it would have been. This is a point guard for the Knicks. He was the fifth string point guard for the Knicks. He's a graduate of Harvard. So all of a sudden, out of desperation, Coach D'Antoni puts him in. And the guy's unbelievable. He puts up like 20 points. He out-Kobe'd Kobe Bryant.
38 points against Kobe.
Yeah, and Kobe was like, I can't believe it. This kid's amazing. So, I mean, it's just wild. Anyway, I know you're a huge Knick fan.
Huge, yeah. No, Jack, I'm a very happy guy these days.
So take us to the next.
So we've got, Jim, along with Jimmy Carbone, we're going to be kind of throwing a 100th episode party for the various shows on the network that have hit that milestone.
Well, you know, Jimmy Carbone is now the official event organizer for all of Heritage Radio Network. So all our listeners and followers should be really psyched that there'll be, you know, between 8 and 10 events a year now.
Yeah.
All revolving around the hosts and the issues that we bring up on the network.
So, yeah, I wanted to shout out the shows that are hitting that. The main course, you have 130 episodes leading the pack.
Really? Am I the oldest show?
You are leading the pack. Yeah.
Mediocre since the beginning.
So let's see what else we've got. Erica Wides did 118 episodes.
Erica White, 118? How is she so close to me?
She doesn't take weeks off. Well, no, I don't know.
I don't really know. I mean, in Thanksgiving, I do. Anyway, and hers remains a very good show. I mean,
Snacky Tunes is 102. Beer Sessions just hit 100. And then we've got Hot Grease is at 96.
Wow, Nicole, good job.
Unfiltered is at 98. You ready for this? The Naturalist, 91.
What do you mean? That's how old Bernie is?
That's how old he is, yeah.
Okay, Bernie is 91.
Actually, 91 episodes from him, though. It's incredible.
He should do an episode a year.
That would be.
And so it always equals his age.
Nice.
Now, it says Farm Report 11, but that looks like a typo.
That's 111.
Wow. Now, that was with two different hosts, right?
I was a host of the Farm Report at one point.
What's your most favorite show to produce?
Oh, man.
Single most favorite over time, consistent, of this 100 group.
Wow. I might have to get back to you with that answer. That's tough.
Yeah, well, Taste of the Past is at 88. Linda Palacio, she has probably some of the most high-powered guests on her show, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. She's the content's always great. What else is there?
Burning Down the House?
Burning Down the House at 89. Yeah.
I have a feeling that when you tag that, Jack, that show expands your brain more than any other. Because it's like so challenging. It's me going to read.
It's me going to night school. I think The Speakeasy is my favorite show because they give me so much good booze.
Really?
Yeah.
I notice how the tags seem to lag towards the end of the show.
A little bit. Yeah.
Cool. And what else is going on? Yeah, those shows are all fantastic.
Yeah, so congratulations to all those hosts. It's pretty incredible that all those shows are nearing 100. And
Greenhorn Radio, though, I think is the oldest show after mine.
Farm Report. You, Farm Report, Greenhorn, and Unfiltered.
You know, I think Farm Report was well after, actually. Greenhorn, I remember I made a donation to Severin's nonprofit because I was like, we cannot open a radio station with only one show. So Severin's like, I'll do it. And she's since emailed me, thanking me because she says the radio really provides her whole network with a structure and a focus and this great. And that. So she's been great for us. I mean, 90, when she does 92 shows, that means truly she's been talking to 92 farms.
Right. Right, never a repeat, so that's incredible. Now moving to the future, Mitchell Davis had Melissa Clark on.
Who you love her.
You love her. Everyone loves her.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, you said she gave you some of the best tags of all time.
Yeah, man, she's great. She talks a mile a minute, but she's saying great stuff, you know. So they were talking about Valentine's Day, and this is what Melissa has planned.
Look, if you can afford to go out to really high-end restaurants and you can afford to get an incredible piece of fish or meat, like for Valentine's Day, this is what I'm making. You want to hear? So I'm going to get an incredible rib steak with the bone in, and it's going to be grass-fed, but it's going to be...
You just said that and I started salivating.
Yeah, rib steak with the bone in, and I am going to rub this thing down with lemon zest and coarse salt and ground juniper and pepper, like... But you can take out the lemon zest and the juniper. Just salt and pepper, that'll do it. But good salt, good pepper, good meat. And then I am going to sear the heck out of it. Uh-huh. And it's going to be bloody rare and oozing in the middle. And it's going to be crispy and brown and golden on the ends. And oh my God, what is better than that? Not hard, people. Not hard.
Your husband does know how lucky he is, doesn't he?
Most of the time, yeah. Yeah.
Although I imagine...
when he's left with the dishes, though, sometimes he's probably like, really? We couldn't order in?
So, yeah. The happy show.
Yeah, right?
Everyone sounds so happy on there.
It's early in the morning. I don't know.
Mitch is very merry.
Well, what are you guys doing for Valentine's Day? How did that sound? That sounded good to me. Just a steak at home.
I'm stuck at the farm, sadly. My wife will be in the city, so.
Now, which farm is this?
This is Madava Farms, which is part of Crown Maple.
Wow.
Up in Dover Plains.
Maple syrup. Maple it's syrup. Getting to be that season. Those trees are...
We are harvesting sap, and it... Probably today is going to be our first sugar making.
Now, it's really the season that dictates when you have to perform, right? Or the temperature.
It is. It's the temperature change between the nighttime has to be below freezing and then the daytime needs to be warm so that the sap starts flowing up towards the leaves.
Very interesting. Well, we're going to talk more about that. But Valentine's Day is, I like what she said, because a lot of people come to the butcher shop or, you know, they're online and thinking about whether they should order something from Heritage Foods, and they freak out. They're like, oh, well, I don't know how to make that orange jus, you know, chutney and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, listen, just salt and pepper it. It should be an everyday food. You know, or one that you're like, hey, we decided to stay home. Let me defrost those pork chops and eat that. People
Absolutely.
Don't think that way. You know, they think, oh, if I'm going to use that $4 chop, you know, which really isn't that much. Oh, we have to do this and that. Then they end up taking risks and screwing it up sometimes.
I think it's important to do something that you are comfortable with so you know that it's going to turn out good. And yeah. I come from the restaurant background who I don't want to go out. I don't want to go out for Valentine's Day. I want to stay in and enjoy it with the person that I'm having dinner with.
Well, you're also in the food industry, so it's funny, rites of passage, like my 40th birthday, for instance, it was nice to stay home.
Absolutely.
But, you know, most people use rites of passages as a chance to, you know, try out Gramercy Tavern
sure.
again. Or, you know.
But it's amateur night.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is that you're Bridge surrounded by people who yep. don't go out except for on these special occasions.
I wonder if that weighs. It must weigh on the servers more than anyone.
That's the worst.
Yeah. Also, it's when you put too much energy. It's like going to a Michael Jackson concert or something in the 80s. Like, too much pressure is riding on it. You know, guys thinking like, hey, are they ripping me off? Or what's that guy trying to upsell me?
Exactly.
You know? That's why it's important to go out to decent restaurants, family style, even if it's like the meatball shop, like consistently with the family.
Right.
Like, keep that flame alive.
Yeah.
Because there is a whole performance to it. You are, Jack, with yourself?
No.
Who's your girlfriend?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was close. Right. That was close. I almost got a consonant or a vowel. So what are you going to be preparing, Jack? Are you coming up for some pork chops?
Prepare a bottle of champagne and take it from there. Though I'll say to your earlier point, last night I actually cooked some of the Heritage rabbit sausage and salt and pepper, put it up and just, you know, made little like sausage balls and fried them.
It was good.
Pretty simple, pretty delicious.
Another mistake, the thing that I liked about how it worked out, it wasn't really planned. I got half a pound of Armandino Batali's lamb prosciutto, which is very, very lamby. And that was it. That was with the cheese, the only representative of from charcuterie. And I think sometimes people get like poo-poo platters. And even if they love something, they've just eaten all of its representatives because someone's put eight different kinds of something on a plate. It's nice to get one good thing you like and just eat a lot of it. Like,
yeah.
Almost gluttonously.
Yeah. So Whitney Houston died.
Oh,
yeah.
That was sad.
I think we're going to end the week in review with some of her music.
She had a real up and down life, right? I mean, sometimes she looked great, sometimes she looked disheveled. But either, I mean, either way, however much you dice it up, she's one of the best singers America's ever had.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely, and yeah.
Her rendition of the national anthem at the Super Bowl was probably the best it's ever been sung.
She belted it out.
Yeah.
Plus, she was a tiny figure. You know, like, some opera singers are big, and you can expect them to belt it out. But, I mean, she is a very stick figure with huge lungs.
Interestingly enough, she was dating a young rapper right as she died. Isn't that funny?
A young rapper? Yeah. No, she did have a long affair with Brown?
Bobby Brown,
Bobby yeah. Brown. What was his story, Jack?
It wasn't very good.
Was he talented?
Yeah, he was really talented. He was, when he came out, people thought he was going to be the new Michael Jackson.
But he fizzled pretty,
yeah.
I wouldn't say quickly, but pretty quickly.
Right.
So, anything else in the Week in Review, Jack?
No, man. Let's get the
show
going.
Wait. You did have one thing you asked me to think about.
Oh, that's true. I did want you guys to think about which restaurant you missed the most.
Trader Vic for me. It's like an amusement park in there. Tiki heads and fires and drinks and, you know, all this overhead that restaurants don't really put, you know, they trying to save money on overhead, not like spend tons of money on statues made of wood.
The Trader Vic's in Beverly Hills was my grandfather's favorite restaurant to go to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, they would go there for every special occasion that they had. And
he lived there?
Yeah, I'm from Southern California.
God, what was the restaurant scene out there like back then?
I mean, it was the Brown Derby, Trader Vic's. I mean, it was these very, let's call them posh supper clubs.
Big places. Yeah, almost like lobster houses.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the food must have been, the restaurant scene must have been bad other than those places. Like, where did people eat?
You know,
eat?
You had diners
right.
And, you know, places like that that you would go to. But nothing, I mean, there was no in between. Back in the day, there was no in between.
Yeah, well, I mean, in New York City, people ate at coffee shops a lot.
Right. Same type of thing, and they were everywhere. And now there's very few of those places still left.
Hmm. So is that the restaurant you miss the most?
You know, I would say, can I say a restaurant that's still around, but it's not on the East Coast?
Yes.
I mean, In-N-Out Burger.
Hmm, you miss
wow.
it.
Yeah, I know. I'm one of those few people that, you know, a lot of people don't love In-N-Out Burger, but I think when you're used to it and you get that taste, you really love it.
Well, it seems like every American has some genetic predisposition to a certain fast food
absolutely.
Place. I mean, I need McDonald's once every 2 months, 3 months. I'm just go spend $19 there and eat 30 things. The 9-piece McNugget, quarter pounder with cheese, and a double cheeseburger.
And do you get a shake or do you get a soda?
I'm very lucky. If I was a shake chocolate guy, I would weigh 300 pounds. I mean, really, because I'd really abuse salts. I'll always, like, at the end of the night, I really secretly always want a slice of pizza.
Oh, me too. I wake up much better the next morning if I've had a salty slice of pizza. Much better.
And saw me, like, fattily leave the bar yesterday and go get a slice. And then I left it under the bushes so I could go back to it throughout the night. And Ann's like, how is he eating another one? I mean, not under bushes where dogs pee. It was a kind of, you know, windowsill deck. Anyway, well, very good. We're going to now continue talking. Jack, feel free to chime in throughout because we're going to ask some real general questions that Betsy helped me write up.
All right.
And we'll be right back.
I would only be in your way, so I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And
this program has been sponsored by the Hearst Ranch. At Hearst Ranch, Ranch manager Cliff Garrison describes their philosophy. Raising cattle on grass is both an ancient practice and one that is standard in much of the modern world. Sometimes the old ways are the right ways. We believe that our methodology is the right one for us. For more information on their premium grass-fed beef, visit HurstRanch.com.
We both know I'm not what you need.
There she belts it out. She's like a tiger in a cage at the beginnings of those songs. Like, you can tell she's about to explode.
Man, that song's really a bummer now, though, huh?
Yeah, it really is. That would be cool if we could get Katie to do voiceover, but also backup songs to to various sponsorship recordings. Well, we are in studio with Scott Boggs, and we know each other through Taylor Boddicker, one of this country's great charcutiers.
Yeah, we both used to supply him livestock, meats.
Well, let's talk just about Honor Taylor for a second. He's providing some charcuterie for the wedding. I mean, what do you admire so much about his charcuterie and what he does there?
I think, you know, being really close to him in the production stages, and, you know, I was the person delivering at the back door, was just seeing the care that he took in every step of what he does. I mean, all the way till the end of him being at the counter selling to people. Mm-hmm. Explaining how things are made, you know, never questioning the classes that he does to really educate people. It's amazing. I mean, the time that he puts into it.
Hundreds different cured items, right? I mean, or 80, or he has a lot of SKUs.
Probably close. I mean, with the fresh butcher shop, over 100. For sure.
And how does he just have charts for each item and says this is how you make it, and he's just
he has a recipe book that's just a huge. Huh. It's huge.
And does he go off gut a little bit to develop those recipes?
It starts off on taking one recipe and, you know, kind of changing it a little bit until he gets it to the point that he wants it to be. And I've tasted a lot of different, I mean, what would you call them, you know, early stage recipes that are, some of them are phenomenal and some of them are just not there.
Not there yet.
But that's how you find something that's really amazing.
You got to make bold moves to produce great food.
Yeah.
So talking about food, in quotes, we're going to just throw out, this is the final show before my wedding. It's just like conversations with Scott Boggs. So Paula Deen and the media's part in encouraging unhealthy retrograde trends in food.
I have a really, really hard time with this one because I wanted to watch the Today Show when she was on, and I had to leave at, you know, 6 a.m. to go upstate. Mm-hmm. My wife was watching it, and she texted me when it was over, and she said, "It's just despicable." Mm-hmm. I mean, that someone who is peddling unhealthy food on, you know, the Food Network is sitting here telling you, and when you get diabetes, you can basically, you can use the medication that I think is the best one to use. Well, how I don't understand how more people don't see through this.
Well, I mean, does she really think that you're going to get diabetes from eating her food, or does she think, like, you know, if you eat her food in moderation, it's just like anything else?
But I mean, she sits here and says, well, I eat my food in moderation, but she still has diabetes.
Yeah.
So,
and they did have a New York Times article where they compared the calories in her dishes, I believe, and in dishes, you know, like potato gnocchi with cheese at a very good restaurant, you know, or one that we wouldn't view as being unhealthy. And with rare exception, her food was way, way more unhealthy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Except in maybe like one vitamin category or something. But everything else was horrible.
But it's one of those things. I mean, I think I eat healthy, but every once in a while, I mean, it's like our dinner the other night. That wasn't a healthy.
No, it wasn't.
But that's not the norm. I mean, that's my once every month type of a meal. And I think you can still enjoy yourself, but not get diabetes.
Yeah, well, I like it. You know, it's funny. People say, well, I want to lose weight or I want to eat healthier. So then they start in the minus category. They're like, right. What am I going to take away? When in reality, it's like you say, it should all be about the opposite, going all out. And being totally gluttonous, but maybe once a month right. or twice a month. Then it's actually about going and like, how are you going to spend? It's like a culture of positive versus a culture of exactly. taking away.
Because when you have the mindset of taking away, you're never going to be happy with what you're doing.
Right. Right. You know, you feel drunk from the night before. You have a headache. What are you supposed to do? Drink a little. You know, have right. a Bloody Mary. You know, it's always go opposite. I'm always amazed how the opposite is always right.
Yeah. You know, Paula Deen tried to get a show at Heritage, but we turned her down.
We turned it down. She couldn't fit into the doorway. That's Whoa. Why. Oh, hello. I actually think, listen, she's not a bad person in that. That food world would always need, I mean, Smithfield is always going to need a spokesperson. Sure. They're always going to pay someone enough. You would just kind of wish that collectively all great famous people would just be like, no, you know, we're not going to go in this, or they'd have to get some faceless corporate chef that no one, like, you know, like the Domino's pizza guy chef that they show on television, you know, but instead right. they get Paula Deen and it puts a lot of teeth into
the
But movie.
You know, you have her publicist who quits right after this happens.
Mm.
Her son who is trying to get as far away from his mother as possible. I mean, wow. I think it's a tough one because she did something that she thought was going to be okay, and the reality was that it wasn't.
Mm. Yeah, well, very interesting. And Jack, I mean, and what you told me is not only is this like problematic and annoying, but she's also making a whole ton of money yeah,
right.
off of her opportunities. And what about all those people that can't?
Right, you she know, should be donating any
sell
dollar.
Their house
any dollar she makes promoting this medication should be donated back. You know, it's insane.
It's a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah,
and I saw Oprah interview her too. I mean, poor Oprah's always had trouble with how to handle yeah. the food thing. I mean, from that getting sued by the Texas Cattlemen Association.
Oh yeah.
To now, you know, saying, "Oh, Paula Deen is our baby," you know, the American child. Like poor Oprah, like she never really got it. Just like Paul McCartney, you know, with his vegetarianism. I mean, what he was for was animal rights. That's powerful, right. you know, but vegetarianism anyway. People who just don't get it anyway, but whose heart is in the right direction.
Right.
So this is a great question. I had someone help me write these questions. Fast food chains predominate in poor neighborhoods and may constitute a kind of ethnic cleansing. Is that too extreme a statement?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one because, you know, I think one of the reasons that they do so well is that you have these poor neighborhoods where people, I mean, for a lot of people, going out to a McDonald's or, let's say, a step up from that, let's say, like an Olive Garden, which still is, I consider that a fast food chain, it's their treat.
Their what now?
It's their treat. To go out to these yeah. places where, you know, for us, it's fancier restaurants and that are somewhat healthier. It's, I think it's a terrible cycle that we have where, how do you get away from it?
Well, Jack, I don't know. Have you ever come across this stat? No. How many times do people go out in America?
Per week?
Yeah.
So how many meals do they eat out per week?
I guess dinners is what I'm most interested in. But just meals, because, I mean, every lunch could be out.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's the thing.
5 to 10, I'd guess.
I mean, I think people go out, including McDonald's, twice a week, I mean, I would guess. Three times?
You know, I know of people. I wouldn't call them my friends or acquaintances, but I know of people who eat out at McDonald's for every lunch.
Every lunch. And then at dinner, you know, it's just so damn easy. You go get your gas in your car. You pull into the drive-thru. It's like an extension of your kitchen. It's sometimes, you know, also the only thing open.
Here's a stat. Over 25% of Americans consume fast food every day.
Okay.
There you go.
And Americans average 4 to 5 meals out a week.
And then you have a huge chunk of people who never go to fast food.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that bumps the number up
right,
even
exactly.
more.
I mean, maybe the group that doesn't go to fast food is just, you know, Californians and, you know, East
Heritage
Coasters.
Heritage Radio Network listeners.
Or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people who live in the Midwest who aren't close enough to a fast food restaurant.
Who have no choice. Now, do you think it's a red state, blue state thing? I mean, this
The locavore?
People in the Republican, yeah, the locavore movement and going to McDonald's.
I think that it used to be the case, but I think that, you know, a lot more, I think it definitely used to be more, you know, Democratic people were trying to eat as local as possible, but now I think there's a shift where it's more balanced.
Because you would think the food would transcend the politic, because, you know, exactly. Republicans are about, you know, preserving national parks, yep. too, and being prideful of America. And
then you have the situation of the
they're
cost.
Also wealthier.
They are. They
Republicans
are.
Exactly. should be wealthier, so you would think that it wouldn't matter.
Exactly. But, I mean, the cost of deliverability for so many, you know, farms, it's much more practical for them to deliver local than to ship, you know, across the country.
Well, you've lived in a bunch of different places. I mean, how does this locavore phenomenon manifest itself in the average, you know, medium-sized city or town or something? I mean, is it just two farmers markets, or is there a real peppering of every community with restaurants and, you know, good fast food places? And
I think nowadays you're seeing a lot more smaller cities or towns that are realizing how important it is to source as locally as possible.
And to differentiate themselves exactly. from all fast restaurants.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, because it is such a, you know, it's very voiced at this point. You hear about it in the media, you know, from your friends, that people want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, whether it's because they really understand the benefits or they hear that it's good, it's going to be something that people want to be a part of.
What about Chinese food? I mean, is that fast food? Because it's delicious.
Well, are we talking about like New York Chinese food?
No, like Chinese in, you know, delivery.
Sure.
Chinese restaurants that deliver throughout the country. I mean, it is a restaurant that is everywhere. I mean,
it is.
There's not a neighborhood in America that probably doesn't have a Chinese restaurant within, you know, a half hour, most of America.
Right.
Is that fast food?
I think it is. But I don't think it necessarily has to be unhealthy.
Right, that's true.
See, I kind of go back and forth on this, because wouldn't fast food, traditional fast food, be more regulated than something like Chinese food?
Well, I think that's the thing, is that when we associate fast food, we associate it with chains.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the reality is that there's a lot of fast food out there that is, you know, it's a single entity. It's one or two restaurants. But it's not...
It's still the same food.
Sure.
I mean, or, you know, I mean, they're still buying from the same... Like, you said Olive Garden is fast food.
Yeah. I think it is.
Yeah, definitely.
So what is not? I mean, Danielle is not. But, like, where's that line, more or less?
I think, you know, if you're buying in a product that's pre-made and ready to go, more or less, I consider that fast food.
Mm.
And, I mean... I think
so Chinese food is on the line.
It's on the line.
Yeah, it's probably the same. Yeah, and like you say, you can eat healthy.
You can.
You can get rice and vegetables,
yeah.
if you want.
I mean, here we can get brown rice and we can get sautéed vegetables that are very delicious but are not fried. Mm-hmm. They're not in a, you know, a super sugary sauce.
Because then, I mean, you could have you could define fast food as... everything. I mean, coffee shops. I grew up mm-hmm. on coffee shops. Love it. They're delicious cheeseburgers, but that's probably fast food. I mean, commodity, I guess, is, you know.
And this is the thing, is that there is that gray area, because, you know, a lot of the Asian or Chinese restaurants in New York City, you know, they're buying from these small Chinese, you know, vegetable purveyors. Mm-hmm. And during the summer, all of their produce is coming from New Jersey. Mm. So,
yeah.
I mean... it's pretty good
yeah.
when you think about it. I mean, it probably could be raised a little bit better, but it's very local.
Fascinating that New Jersey has this dual garden state, and the tomatoes from there are delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually make things that just taste better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you think Newark, and exactly. you know, it's a butt of all jokes on Conan O'Brien about, you know, all these things. And it's just funny how that state has got...
It's fascinating, because it is. It's the two sides.
So now this is a question for you, talking about New Jersey, which is known for the submarine sandwich. If you were given $100 million by George Soros, or Ted Turner, that's who I like. He wants you to do restaurants. And you had to open, you know, 500 restaurants.
Sure. And they all have to be the exact same.
Yeah, very close. Even though you can have local people in each kitchen, you know, doing their own thing, you know, and giving their imprimatur on the signature foods, you know, charming inconsistencies, but mostly the same. What would that menu be?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it's...
I want to hear the real menu items, buddy.
You want to hear real menu items?
Yeah, man, yeah. I mean, this is an interview. Maybe Ted Turner's listening.
So are we using... I mean, we want this to be a healthy alternative to what else is out there, or a local alternative?
You know, he just wants it to be good. Yeah, it would be using... It would be a little bit more expensive, you know, like Chipotle Grill, for instance.
And that, I mean, that's a real interesting one. I was going to say that, is that, you know, they've hired Nate Appleman to head up their local sourcing across the country for their meat products.
Were you buds with him in San Francisco?
I sold them produce and pigs occasionally. And I mean, I think it's great. I think this is a great example of people who are realizing that local is important. I mean, a company that is, I mean, I don't know how many restaurants they have nationwide. Hundreds.
Yeah.
I mean, they see the importance of local.
So then they went Mexican. So what would you do? I mean, I have one idea, I'll say. I mean, after you go, well, like the pork bun, the Mama Fuco Sam pork bun. I mean, or Zach Palacio also with the fatty crabs.
I think I would do something more along the lines of a Mediterranean style restaurant.
Okay.
You know, Ferran Adrià was working and is working with working on a healthy fast food chain.
Interesting, out in Spain, because he closed Il Bulli, right?
He did
after all those years.
Which is, you know, the idea was they were gonna close and be open for 2 years to really train some new chefs and then reopen. And he decided that he wanted to go off and do some new things. But he's been working on this. I think it's called Good Fast for probably 6 or 7 years now. And it's a...
Is it a pizza place?
No, it's you know, it's some sandwiches, it's some salads, it's, you know, things like that that are quick, but you can get something that's very healthy. I would do something like that.
Does that exist? A real... It's almost like an automat where
it's almost like an automat. That's how they're set up there.
Oh,
is
interesting.
That they're... It's not like you don't walk in and it's a refrigerator case of things and you just pull one out. It's more to it than that. I think that's the difference. I mean, I don't want to eat something that's pre-wrapped and cellophane and I just go grab it and it's kind of squished and it doesn't look nice. I mean, you have to put some effort into
but also just a piece of white bread with good tuna fish and a piece of lettuce. I mean, that could also just be... Like, mom makes it, you know, and you can get the version with the crust cut off. So you would just do interesting sandwiches, simple salads.
I would do, you know, good bread, you know, whole grain breads.
Can you partner with the bakery nationwide? No, right? You pretty much have to partner with local.
It's a tough one. Yeah, you would probably have to, you know, have distribution centers across the country, but everybody does already.
Well, look at Starbucks, though. I mean, their bread is horrible. Their food has always been amazingly bad,
Agreed.
What they were trying to do, which is be a place that you want it to be all the time. And
I'm really curious to see what they do, because they're really trying to change their image back to what they were in the beginning.
Which is
a local coffee shop that you can get very good coffee and local pastries and... Because they've gone the exact opposite of that.
It's funny, you know, and it's not like it'd be the end of the world to maintain relationships with, you know, 80 bakers in 80 cities. I mean...
Especially, you know, being from a business side, if someone came to me and I was a baker and they said, this is what we need and this is the recipe that we use in New York City, can you produce this or something very close to it?
Yeah, or run a good sourdough. Right. What's your best sourdough? And it's just that, again, it's those middle managers are not delegated with that power to say, hey, I got you the right bread guy for Michigan.
Right.
They're like, whoa, you know, come on now. You know, we have our one guy in Seattle and he FedExes it everywhere.
Exactly, which is awful.
Yeah.
And, I mean, another thought is that doing something, I mean, McDonald's is pretty much nationwide the same. But they do little local you know, regional rolls, specialties here and there, doing something that's more regionally, you know, accepted by the people who are living there is also another idea.
I have to say, again, the Chipotle model, that's really, that's it right there.
Yeah, now, is that Bon Appetit Management? Or, I don't know, Bon Appetit, aren't they the ones that source all their food for them? They're a huge catering company that seems to do everything really, really right on.
That sources it for Chipotle?
Yeah, or do they just source themselves? I mean, have they
outsourced? That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't talked to Nate since he started this new project, so.
God, everybody is now coming to the realization. Well, I mean, many people came to the realization well before me, but when all this sustainable food movement hits, where is the food going to come from? It's like no one's really thought about the supplies. Bill Nyman, right. He started the supply. But, you know, you don't know that many names like that. Whereas, you know, a million chefs, you know, Michelle Obama's doing this and that. But name the farming group that's like, we're going to go all sustainable or, you know.
I mean, and we're in the heart of this and we don't even know the names of these people.
Yeah, I know.
Which it's is interesting. Just,
yeah, very. That's a great point. Very, very. Well, now, anyway, talking about farming, you're going to be getting back to the farm a little bit, although you, and it's a very interesting thing. Are you at liberty to talk about your next project?
Yeah, I can definitely talk about it.
It's a high tech, I don't want to say molecular gastronomy.
Oh, no, I wouldn't go that far because that, I think that conjures up a certain image of
beakers and smoke coming out of beakers. Well, you're going to one of the highest tech maple syrup farms in the world.
Yes. I think right now we're the most technologically advanced in the country.
So what does that mean? Well, how does that, you know, manifest itself?
We do traditional harvesting of maple sap, but once it leaves the tree is where it really changes is you know, we manage our forests organically. We manage the forests as far as, you know, harvest, you know, selective harvesting of the trees to keep the forest healthy. And then once it comes out of the tree, we actually use a vacuum system that we can use a smaller hole in the tree, which is better for the tree, but we get the same amount of sap out of it.
Because
we use a vacuum.
It actually lightly sucks the syrup out of the tree, right?
Exactly. And the other thing that's very important for what we're doing is we process the sap within 24 hours. Hmm. It used to be within 6 hours, but we have a lot more trees this year, so it's going to take us a little bit longer.
So it actually preserves the essence of the maple syrup?
Exactly. I mean, just like anything else, it oxidizes.
Hmm.
So if you can, if you can, you know, concentrate that sap quicker, you have less oxidation, so you retain more of the flavors. We also remove 90% of the water before we start cooking it.
So water is bad, technically, for pure taste.
It's not bad. What it is you have to boil the sap longer to get it to the viscosity that you need it to be. So if you can get it to the proper sugar before, or I should say not before, but quicker, you retain more of the flavors.
Interesting, very interesting. So you've lived a fascinating farming life. I mean, you didn't grow up a farmer.
No, I didn't. My grandfather was a hog farmer, but that was long before I came around.
And then you what were you doing? I mean, Northern California,
Northern California,
you're
I was
like a farm tradesman. I mean, you can go anywhere and figure anything out, right?
Hopefully. I mean, that's the idea. I mean, we'll be starting a vegetable garden and orchard on the property.
Meat.
Eventually meat. There's discussion. We're not going to do the meat on the property that we're on right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll either rent or buy a property very close by to do that.
No, it's good. It weeds out the, you know, you don't want to have a bunch of live animals on if you can't get the whole vegetable thing figured out.
Right, I mean, exactly.
Pacing.
Exactly.
Meat always came second, right? Anyway. I mean,
it was always something that, I mean, I love eating meat. We don't eat very much of it for, you know, a lot of reasons. One of them being it's expensive to eat good meat.
Mm-hmm.
And we would rather eat good meat all the time that we eat it versus eating meat all the time.
But you worked on a meat farm in Northern California.
I did. I ran a hog and poultry farm all pasture raised. And
were you an XL cowboy like Brian Kenny, or were you actually carrying the feed and
no, I was carrying the feed and taking them to slaughter and doing all of that. But I mean, nowadays to be a successful farmer, you do. I mean, you do have to use computers and technology to really, really do it properly as well as do it as efficiently as you can.
How are you entrusted with that job? I mean, with all the farmer types that would work on a farm, like how did you, you know, intern or apprentice?
Well, I got out of the kitchen. I was cooking at the French Laundry, and I got out of the kitchen and took over their gardens there. So I had an in from the beginning right there, and then I had some phenomenal mentors who really helped me along.
Wow. So then you worked briefly with the Breslin and know their farm projects.
I mean, I was really helping them out with their sourcing of product and buying at the markets, and we were in the process of finding a property to farm. And I hope they still do it. I really hope that they follow through with that, because they're a great supporter of local.
Yeah. Well, yeah, April really cares.
She's
awesome. Everyone loves her.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have a phenomenal relationship with them.
I'd love to have her come on. She has a great face for the radio. And
she does.
She's very passionate about it. No, she is just great, and she's very honest. Like, and I love chefs who, you know, some chefs I love to, when I see them, I want to really be with them. But like for the business, it's hard enough to make business. I love an in and out situation where it's like we'll come to an agreement and then let's talk once a year, you know, about work.
Right.
If I saw her, we'd talk about other things. But, you know, in and out, all she wants is the meat. All I want to do is sell it to her. It's a nice, clean relationship.
It is.
You know, she makes it easy.
I mean, she's so busy.
And she's successful, yeah.
She is, yeah.
So, very, very interesting. And how do we keep track of your career now? Is there a website on this maple syrup?
So, crownmaple.com is the website. And, you know, that'll show everything that we have going on with the maple syrup.
That's crownmaple.com.
And then I will start posting about the gardens as we start developing them, which will be this spring, so very soon.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. I wanted a nice, calm, you know, final show before my wedding and, you know, honeymoon.
Exactly.
And Michelle Obama said no. And then Whitney Houston couldn't make it. So, Scott,
ooh,
thanks for... No, anyway, I am a big fan of Whitney Houston. I think she's great. Our next show after this is Katie Kiefer's Straight No Chaser.
Yeah.
Then there's the Mike and Judy show. Then there's Morning After. And then a pre-recorded episode 89 of Burning Down the House.
No, this is a live episode tonight of Burning Down the House.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
Fasten your seatbelts, everybody. And Jack, great job. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Go Knicks.
Go Knicks. Go Lynn.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.